Nobody really want fuego. Messiah will bring fire down worse than Waco. Buy you some coffee and Lego, your egos, your sandwich with mayo and two slices of mayo. Sitting at home on the couch playing Halo, but the Messiah ain't playing no wiggles. Games, women and pants gonna get it. Flames, brothers keeping no commandments. Same, calling our armies a favor. Even with your NATO and soldiers with Dracos. Just tell me, how can you stop a tornado or better yet the lava from the volcano? They really can't, bro. They have to pay, bro. The most I say so. So in chase they go for all the wicked atrocities they owe. From San Diego to Trinidad Tobago, I'm spitting these words so all Israelites they know. Keeping commandments the only way we grow so we can defeat the nation Galileo. Nation Galileo, get it? Cause they pale. He's bringing them hell for every bill of sale. So family, just examine yourself when that fuego come. You don't want to get left. Forsake your sin so you complete the test. Then you can have complete rest from all your stress. Fight to do right to your very last breath. Or stay wicked and receive second death. Destruction of enemies is muy bueno. Make sure that's one of the things that you pray for. Into the kingdom, the sinners, they can't go. The sinners can't go. So we say, hasta luego, hasta luego.
Brothers really don't want fuego. Sisters really don't want fuego. Nobody really want fuego. From the one that's too fuego.
Turn it.
Fuego really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Fuego really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Fuego really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Nobody really want fuego.
Hey,
from the one that's too
fuego.
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 Brother, you don't want that fuego.
You don't want that fuego.
Hey.
Fuego.
Fuego.
Nah.
Sister, you don't want that fuego.
Nah.
Hey. Like that. Fade to the black.
Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour, the Lost 144K. I am Captain Yahshua.
Shalom, Captain Amariah.
Shalom, Officer Ruvain.
Hey, Officer Ruvain.
Turn it.
Is that the guy that
Turn
was,
it.
Is that the guy that was singing?
Sounds very familiar.
Sounds like we had technical difficulties.
Damn.
Damn. Oh, man. All praise to the Most High for another blessed Sabbath. For us to be here, be able to do the show. We're going to continue on. There were some more things that we kind of left on the table.
It was too much.
It was too much.
It was too much.
Too much, too much information.
Too much. Had to go back.
We got to go back. We had to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Run it back.
Stop.
Run it back.
Turn it.
Won't stop.
Take that.
Anyway, so this week is part two about the truth about Thanksgiving, American civil religion. And I think most people who, I think even people who celebrate blindly, like, kind of know in general, right, that it was a massacre day, like you said, Thanksgiving and all that. Most people know that. Most people know that. So, you know, I didn't want to necessarily harp on that part of it. So last week we were talking more about how people follow behind it so blindly and how it meets the requirements for what is known as civil religion. It's a sociological term where it's opposed to organized religion as far as its structure, but it's still a religion in the way like the founding fathers are venerated. They're seen in certain ways. So we're going to kind of recap some of that when we go into it. Again, just to reemphasize that piece of it. And I wanted to go over a few more examples in the book where it speaks about what led up to it. So I don't want people to think about this as Thanksgiving was just a day where it was a big massacre. It was the beginning of the harbinger of doom of the Native American Indians.
Right.
There were many things that led up to the circumstances where some of the natives, I'm not going to say all, where some of the natives did break rank with these heathens, but it was more of a kind of forced into a, we have no choice but to kind of make friends with these people because due largely to the disease that they brought with them, they wiped out most of our people, so who else is there for us to kind of work with? So it wasn't like it was more of a mutually beneficial thing rather than let's be so kind and generous with each other type of thing, right? So, and there were some things that led up to that. So that's what we're going to talk about.
Hey, on Wednesday, they had food for us at work because we were in close to the office. And they were like, we're pushing.
Before last week, I would say, yeah, exactly. That's right.
But I said, no, I don't celebrate for that. And also because it's idolatry.
Right.
And he's like, oh, okay.
And then, like,
love.
People don't realize exactly
what it is.
It is.
The celebration of the genocide of the so-called Native Americans, right? Millions of our brothers were slaughtered at the hands of heathen. And that's what the day is about.
But it's much deeper than this.
Yes. It's
idolatry. It's fine.
Read that.
Colossians chapter 2, verse 8. Beware, any man, boy, you philosophy, vain deceit, after tradition, men,
after the rudiments of
not after
Christ.
So all
that is, let us know. He's giving us some warnings.
Beware. That's the warning.
He says, don't let
any boys from us
It's not working. Okay. go ahead.
This is the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 28, verse 48. Therefore shalt thou serve thine enemies.
For not serving God with joyfulness and gladness of heart, he let us know that we would serve our enemies, read.
Which the Lord shall send against us.
Because he sent them against us before our rebellion for not keeping his commandments, read on.
In hunger, and in thirst, and in nakedness.
So we know that we go to our enemies for food, clothing, shelter, so on and so forth. But this is the part that I want, read.
And in the want of all things.
In want of all things. And being socially accepted, we have to now become, what's the word that we use?
Assimilated
to these different holidays and these different ideas that has been pushed to us by our oppressors. And once of all things, we don't have a culture. They stripped us of ours and said, okay, now you're Negroes, now you're Black, now you're Hispanics, now you're, you know, whatever byword that they put onto us. Now in want of all things, including culture, we go to our enemies. That's why we can so ignorantly celebrate Thanksgiving like it's just like the norm. Like, oh no, it's just turkey. That's all it is.
And you're the outcast if you don't do it.
Oh, I'm telling you, like the looks that you give. Oh no, I don't celebrate.
What? What do you mean?
What? And then I said, no, I don't celebrate Thanksgiving. And then the response was, why are you Muslim? Really? Of all things, that's what. Of all things.
No. That probably means they were looking at you and your beard and everything, yep. And they were just. That thing's been in his mind for a minute. That was his opportunity to
right. Right,
ask
right.
you if you're Muslim.
Why are you Muslim? And I'm like, no. I don't even know how to even answer that, but no, I'm not. Thanks. That was a cap.
Goodness gracious. Excuse me. Oh, that's terrible. Anyway, so it's interesting. What you're basically saying, and the reason people are all behind that, it goes back to the civil religion piece. Right. Another term is also called folk religion, right? Or an ethnic religion, because Thanksgiving is very ethnocentric, meaning mm-hmm. it's something that's only celebrated here in the United States of America, right? But it has like it's the world knows that that's a big holiday for us, right? Like when because we'll teach a little bit about each country,
mm-hmm.
You know, they basically teach the same about us, right? And it talks about Thanksgiving. So it says in religious studies and folkloristics, folk religion or popular religion or vernacular religion compromises various forms and expressions of religion that are distinct from the official doctrines and practices of organized religion. They're defending and questioning and keeping Thanksgiving the same way we would defend and keep the Sabbath.
Yep.
Right? So they're treating you like it's a sin that you're not celebrating Thanksgiving.
Right.
Right. So it's very religious in the way that it's kept. It says the precise definition of folk religion varies among scholars, sometimes also termed popular belief. It consists of ethnic or regional religious customs under the umbrella of a religion, but outside official doctrine and practices. So it's where the line is skewed. This is why churches and all these things and these denominations will celebrate Thanksgiving, they will push it. They will be there at the turkey lines and the soup kitchens on that day
mm-hmm.
and all of that stuff. But whereas you won't find Thanksgiving as a holiday in the scriptures.
Right.
So this is why it says they keep it as a religion, but it's distinct from the official doctrines and practices of organized religion. So you'll see that there's a difference. And they'll skew it. It says it's under the umbrella of religion, but it's outside of the official doctrine and practices. But they'll still treat it as a religious custom. All right. It says the term folk religion is generally held to encompass two related but separate subjects. The first is the religious dimension of folk culture or the folk cultural dimensions of religion. The second refers to the study of syncretisms, which is the combining of different beliefs while blending practices of various schools of thought. So that's a nice word for them to say all types of manner of lies mixed together.
Saying, right? That's basically them saying rudiments.
Rudiments, yeah.
Yes. Between two cultures with different stages of formal expression, such as the melange of African folk beliefs and Roman Catholicism, that led to the development of Vodun and Santeria and similar mixtures of formal religions with folk cultures. Chinese folk religion, folk Christianity, folk Hinduism, and folk Islam are examples of folk religion associated with major religions. So the Nation of Islam is folk Islam. because it's not the same Islam that they practice
over there.
Over there with the Arabs.
Right.
All right, but it's drawn from that. So it would fall onto that, and that's why they'll have like different things. So it says the term is also used, especially by the clergy of the faiths involved, to describe the desire of people who otherwise infrequently attend religious worship, do not belong to a church or similar religious society, and who have not made a formal profession of faith in a particular creed, to have religious weddings or funerals among Christians, to have their children baptized. So they're basically trying to say they're non-denominational, but we have to look at this from the context of how Thanksgiving is constructed, right? And I want to look at popular belief, right? So real briefly, popular beliefs, it's a studied subfield of social science like history and anthropology. It examines spiritual beliefs that develop not independently from religion. So Thanksgiving and religion, they seem to be intertwined, but you won't find them in the scriptures, right?
Nope.
And it says, but still outside of established religious institutions, because it's not something that they'll push as that it was in the Bible. So you have aspects of popular piety, historical folklore, historical superstitions, and there's different themes and things that are explored with that, all right? Which all goes back to the civil religion, and I'm going to read that definition again, and then I want to go back into this book here so we can look at some biblical reference as to what happened here. So it says, civil religion, also referred to as civic religion, is the implicit religious values of a nation as expressed through public rituals, okay?
Right.
So rituals is a sequence of activities involving gestures, words, objects, perform in a sequestered place and according to a set sequence.
Thanksgiving,
right? Mm-hmm. You got to have the turkey, you got to have the cranberry,
yep.
You got to have the stuffing.
Dressing,
yes, there will be other dishes there based on your ethnicity, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to have your turkey, you're going to have your stuffing, you're going to have your cranberry, your dressing, all that other stuff.
And when that cranberry mixed with the stuffing, that thing hit, boy.
Ooh,
man.
Hey, as long as it's not Thanksgiving.
Right.
Oh, wait, don't forget to say what you're thankful for. Everybody go around the
right,
table.
Right. And, oh, yeah, you'll have that one, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's of you the uppity type.
Well, that's true.
That's what y'all would do?
Yeah, we kind of did.
Listen, that's not what my Ephraim Puerto Rican family would do. We wouldn't go, but when I would go to like other families, that's kind of let's everybody take a turn and let's just say what we're thankful for.
I couldn't stand it.
I know. I was like, damn, man, I just want to eat.
Right. Like, look at like, that ham over there, man.
So I would be the lame one. Like, I'm thankful for the food and the people that cooked it and.
Yeah.
It's good. Yeah. You know, they're waiting for me to talk about how I'm grateful. I almost drowned when I was 5 and
right.
You know,
right. Like, yeah, with the little violin.
Right. So it's a ritual. There's a sequence of activities that come as part of these things. Mainly it's the food that the obligatory the family has to get together.
Right.
Right. It's all obligation, right? Oh, so what are you doing? Any big plans for Thanksgiving? No, probably gonna have some pizza.
No, right. No, and then like the whole thing is too, then you got to make the decisions of whose house we go to first.
Right.
Second,
it was
third.
Always so stressful.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right? It was stressful because now mom's mad because you chose to go to your wife's house.
Right.
Parents' house first and so on and so forth. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
man.
And then if they're all doing it at the same time, it's like, oh, but you're not going to be there to sit
right.
down and go to the table and
right.
say what you're thankful
for. Right.
Right. So.
He said,
So here's the important thing about rituals. It says rituals may be prescribed by the traditions of a community, including a religious community. All right. So just to get you an idea. So it says civic religion is the implicit religious values of a nation as expressed through public rituals. Symbols and the national flag they mention is one of them. So you would think, see, because when they say religious values, people tend to think denominations.
That's right.
And you have to take that out. What you can coin that as and what they'll do for sociological perspectives and coin that as is organized religion.
Okay? Right.
They'll call that organized religion. You have to get the organized religion of your mind. Religion is simply meaning something that you are beholden to that you hold sacred. Mm-hmm. Right.
The values of America.
Right. Right. Example. So American values would be the implicit religious values of the nation. Right.
Right.
American
right.
values as expressed through public rituals, symbols such as the national flag, God bless America, the national anthem, Pledge of Allegiance every morning at school, and ceremonies on sacred days and at sacred places. Thanksgiving is a ceremony, and the sacred place is what? Oh, we're gonna go to Nana's house, or we always go to Peepa's, whatever it is, right? We always go here.
Peepa.
Yeah, we always go here. We always go there, right? Right. So it says. So in here they're talking about it on a larger scale. They'll talk about monuments, battlefields, national cemeteries. So Memorial Day is part of this. Veterans Day is part of this. It is distinct from churches, meaning different, although church officials and ceremonies are sometimes incorporated into the practice of civil religion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the same thing, but they are incorporated into it. This is where you have your popular reverends that will go and speak at a Thanksgiving sermon or whatever it is and so on. Countries described as having a civil religion include France, South Korea, the former Soviet Union, and the United States. As a concept, it originated in French political thought and became a major topic for U.S. sociologists since its use by Robert Bella. Now, I want to read from the book that part because I'm refreshing everybody's memory about the civil religious piece and how it's kept so strongly as a religion. And it says, here we go.
This is
Lies My Teacher Told Me, Everything Your American History Textbook Got Wrong, by James W. Lowen, all right? And I'm on page 88, all right, in the chapter on Thanksgiving. And he says here, Thanksgiving is the occasion on which we give thanks to God as a nation for the blessings that he have bestowed upon us. More than any other celebration, more even than such overtly patriotic holidays as Independence Day and Memorial Day, Thanksgiving celebrates our ethnocentrism. The archetypes associated with Thanksgiving, God on our side, right? Manifest destiny.
Yep.
Civilization wrested from wilderness.
Yep.
They were savages. We came and we brought them culture and religion, right? It says order from disorder through hard work and good pilgrim character traits, right?
We gave them culture in exchange. They taught us how to plant corn.
Right. They continue to radiate from our history textbooks. Bessie Pierce pointed out the political uses to which Thanksgiving is put. It's political propaganda, Thanksgiving. For these unexcelled blessings, the pupil is urged to follow in the footsteps of his forebears, to offer unquestioning obedience. This is that why you get those weird questions and why you're the weirdo that you don't do this. To the law of the land and to carry on the work begun. Thanksgiving dinner is a ritual with all the characteristics that Mircea Eliade assigns to the ritual observances of origin myths. All right. So I'm saying it's a ritual. We're going to give you some of the ritualistic aspects of it. It constitutes the history of the acts of the founders. They're deemed the supernaturals. The pilgrims have this, right? They're supernatural because they came on the boat. They struggled.
Right.
They were persecuted for religious freedom. They were able to excel here and build their off of nothing. From their bootstraps, from a strange wilderness and a strange place.
And conquered a strange people
and were able to build governments and from nothing and
civilized
civilization, right? It is considered to be true. So the myth of Thanksgiving, this is why we say the truth about Thanksgiving. It tells how an institution came into existence, right? They call them the founding fathers. This is how stuff happened. In performing the ritual associated with the myth, one experiences knowledge of the origin and claims one's patriarchy. It's this sense, that's that obligatory sense by partaking in it, I'm professing my, it's kind of like, what was it? Was it not War of the Worlds? The other one, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like the one that they just did with Nicole Kidman, like the remake. And like, everybody was like, you know, all unified. They would stand together like, whoa, weird. Like it's this weird, eerie type of thing.
Right.
And they all on one mind and one spirit, like they all got to do the same thing. Right. And some of the stuff he was saying, he was like, you know, stop resisting. You know it to be true that our way is better. We're all one way and one mind and this, that. Why make things harder for yourself? And then the fifth one, it says, thus one lives the myth as a religion, right? And that's when we went over last week in Wisdom of Solomon 14, where it says an unholy custom in the process of time, right, becomes law. Let's just read it real quick. And then I want to jump into some more of the things that happened. on Thanksgiving that led up to the whole, you know, they talk about their bootstraps and all that.
14:16. This is the Book of Wisdom of Solomon, chapter 14, verse 16. Thus, in process of time, an ungodly custom grown strong was kept as a law.
An ungodly custom grown strong. At Thanksgiving, I mean, nobody's going to come and lock you up. I mean, now, I mean, there's no laws on the books for not keeping Thanksgiving. But it's kept as a law. It's the law of the land. We read in this book here, right?
Right.
It says it's kept as the law of the land. You're kind of seen as the weirdo. You're ostracized a little bit, you know, to a certain extent, right? Obviously, at work, there's certain behaviors that are expected, so nobody's going to come and get real crazy with you. But I guarantee you, if that was a conversation outside of work and it was just, you know, some people that you were not in charge of, there would probably be a little more colorful.
It would be a lot more than, are you Muslim?
Right.
It would be a lot more.
You hate America. You don't want to keep things spirit.
Right, you know what's funny? Where I was working at, I actually had these two Elamites asked me if I was going to celebrate Thanksgiving, and I was like, no, I'm not. And they were like, well, why not?
And then for those that don't know, Elamites are the East Indians of today. Go on.
Right. So I was like, why not? And I was like, well, you know, it was the massacre of my ancestors. You know, my mom was a Crete Indian, right? And they were like, oh, okay. But they're going to celebrate it, though. That's the craziest thing. Right. They're from a whole different country with different culture and everything, but while they're in America, we go do as the Americans do.
Yeah, when
that's right.
In Rome. As the Romans do, right?
We're gonna eat curry.
All right,
man.
Go ahead, read that again.
Verse 16. Thus, in process of time, an ungodly custom grown strong was kept as a law, and graven images were worshipped by the commandments of kings.
Right, and now I had brought out last week. This is very specifically dealing with the false image of Caesar Borgia. And all of that. But it's the same MO and how they operate that ungodly customs become like the law of the land. In the process of time, it becomes very strong. And it wasn't, although they spoke about this starting in the 1620s or whatever, Thanksgiving wasn't a national holiday until 1863 or something like that. And it was motivated by trying to put something in place. Abraham Lincoln was trying to put something in place to try to bring people together. Because of the Civil War that was going on.
Yep.
Right. So it wasn't some, this was the righteous way. So back here says, my Random House Dictionary lists as its main heading for the Plymouth colonists, not pilgrims, but pilgrim fathers. Thanksgiving has thus moved from history into the field of religion. Civil religion, as Robert Bella has called it. To Bella, civil religions hold society together. Plymouth Rock achieved iconographic status around 1880 when some enterprising residents of the town rejoined its two pieces on the waterfront and built a Greek template around it. The template became a shrine. The Mayflower Compact became a sacred text, and our textbooks began to play the same function as the Anglican Book of Common Prayer, teaching us the meaning behind the civil rite of Thanksgiving. So he's letting you know that if you go to Plymouth Rock and you go to visit it, he goes, there's a shrine there that people visit, and they have this Mayflower Compact, which was supposed to be the forerunner of the Constitution.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that the Constitution, they referenced that it was like the first form of coming here and putting that government together. So he's telling you, if this was around 1880, some of the residents put this together, and they built a Greek, he's letting you know that it comes from a Greek custom. So they built a Greek template around it. This is where they'll display the little – it looks like a column, and they'll display the whatever scroll or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So supposedly the Mayflower Compact is in there. And he says this thing is a shrine. People will go that are able to, and they'll visit this thing, and they'll look at it in awe and be like, wow. And then they'll go back to their Thanksgiving dinner and be like, wow, man.
Like, we made it. Like,
yeah,
it's part of history.
Yeah, this is part of history. Whatever. Right? And it says, and so in that way, the Mayflower Compact is a sacred text. He goes, and then the textbooks began to basically play the function of the Bible, because history textbooks teach us the meaning behind the civil rite of Thanksgiving. It's a rite, just like there's rites and sacraments and Catholicism and everything else. So it's funny to me how you have these people that'll be like, you know, oh, you know, I'm not religious or whatever, but they'll so sacredly hold and keep Thanksgiving and all these other holidays. Like, it's not a law. It's not a command from any book, but – How you know, it's just funny to me how we're the ones that will actually resist against it, and they're all laughing, oh, because you're just a slaughter of the Indians. I find it funny that you so blindly just keep something so paganistic, so ritualistic, and who, like, who told you? Well, where's the command that you must do this? So it says here, the eyes of Europe were upon the little English handful of unconscious heroes and saints, taking courage from them step by step. For their children's children, the same ideals of freedom burned so clear and strong that the little episode we have just been contemplating resulted in the birth of the United States of America, and above all, of the establishment of the humanitarian ideals it typifies, and for which the pilgrims offered their sacrifice upon the altar of the sonship of man. The civil ritual we practice marginalizes Native Americans.
Right.
Because look at all this humanitarian speak and everything that they say. And then this brings me back to what I wanted to kind of jump into here, when we spoke about some of the disease and things like that, right? So last week we touched on a little bit about, you know, how they came and they brought some diseases. We read Deuteronomy 28, 58 through 63, as well as Deuteronomy 28 and 35. And there's an interesting stat line here. It says they brought plague with them, and within 3 years, the plague wiped out between 90 to 96% of the inhabitants of coastal New England.
Man.
Yes. Native societies lay devastated.
Crazy.
It's like some Egypt plague or something.
Because they carried the infestation with them, American Indians died who had never encountered a white person. So when survivors abandoned their villages and they went to neighboring tribes because they were so decimated, they didn't realize that they were spreading it. So it says it was a horrific scene. And it says villages lay in ruins because there was no one to tend them. The ground was strewn with the skulls and the bones of thousands of Indians who had died, and none was left to bury them.
So just coming in contact with this man is hazardous to your health.
Yes. This isn't even talking about when they intentionally started.
Right. With
giving
the blankets.
Blankets and, you know, rotten meat and infested things. This is just them coming in contact with them. So, I mean, you want to talk about the curses where it says about you'll go one way before them.
Yep.
You'll be smitten before them. It doesn't just mean, like, with the sword and with anything else. Like, we were smitten before them from the diseases. And so Deuteronomy 28, a lot of times I think historically we lose perspective on it. And, you know, we'll talk about the stuff that we suffer from today, like, you know, high blood pressure, cholesterol. And, yeah, that's part of the curses that we're under. But they brought this disease with them. They were vectors for the disease.
That's right.
Carriers? Hosts? Or whatever?
Well, they call them disease vectors. So this is where they'll – hosts will be more parasitic. But, right, so this is where they'll carry the disease with them and then spread it, right? So this is what they talk about. So basically they created, like, these pandemics based on this. And it says there's some illustrations here depicting smallpox, and I'll show it on the camera in a second. I'm going to read it. Excuse me. It says, these Aztec drawings depicting smallpox. A sore disease cannot befall the Indians. They fear it more than the plague, for usually they that have this disease have them in abundance. And for want of bedding and linen and other helps, they fall into a lamentable condition as they lie on their hard mats. Excuse me. The pox breaking and mattering and running one into another, their skin cleaving by reason thereof to the mats they lie on. When they turn them, a whole side will flay off at once, as it were, and they will be all of a gore blood, most fearful to behold, and then being very sore, what with cold and other distempers, they die like rotten sheep. So you'll see here, that's a drawing, like a depiction of the smallpox.
You might want to hold it, like, right up.
I think the camera gives it a pretty good view. You don't got to go that close. Right. So, and that's what I just read from. So it's showing you how you'll see there. Explain it real quick as you see it there. Oh, you lost my page. All right. Don't explain it. Just give it back.
You know, Cap, when we – I don't know if Captain Mariah went to Iraq, but we had to get the
–
so you got the anthrax and you got the smallpox, right? And they told – so they gave us the smallpox. They literally injected us with the smallpox in one area on our bicep, right, on our shoulder here. And they told us that if we didn't take care and we let we let the wound like drip to other places, we would basically get the smallpox like all over our bodies.
Wow, that's crazy. So the scripture talks about that, but doesn't call it smallpox. Get Deuteronomy 28:35.
This is the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 28, verse 35. The Lord shall smite thee in the knees and in the legs with a sore botch that cannot be healed, from the sole of thy foot onto the top of thy head.
So this is what they were saying and what they were describing in these drawings. It says the pox, their skin would cleave, and it says their whole sides of their skin would flay off at once. And it would be all gory and bloody, and it would stick to the mats. All right?
Crazy.
It says a sore botch that cannot be healed. Here's another excerpt. It says, during the next 15 years, additional epidemics, most of which we know to have been smallpox, struck repeatedly. European Americans also contracted smallpox and the other maladies, to be sure, but they usually recovered, including in a later century, the heavily pockmarked George Washington, so he was known. So they would recover from it. Native Americans usually died. The impact of the epidemics on the two cultures was profound. The English separatists, which they call the Pilgrims, already seeing their lives as part of a divinely inspired morality play, found it easy to infer that God was on their side. When you look at it from the perspective of the curses, in some respects, it was. I noted Psalm 50:21 here. Let's read that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I went there as I read this, but some scriptures were popping into my head as I was reading parts of this chapter here.
This is the book of Psalms, chapter 50, verse 21. These things hast thou done, and I kept silent.
So they thought God was on their side because they saw the natives dying, and they were living, and they were recovering. Right? Come on.
How thoughtest that I was altogether such an one as thyself?
That's that manifest destiny. Come on.
But I will reprove thee and set them in order before thine eyes.
He's going to set us in order. So those same natives, those same, that remnant that's still around, those same people, because those same spirits are here. They don't remember that they were the Pilgrims and all that. Mm-hmm. But you're going to see them set in order before thine eyes in that day. That's why he says they found it easy to infer that God was on their side. He says, you thought I was altogether such as one as thee.
I mean, how can you not? You know?
Right. That's the grand design that the Most High put in place.
Exactly.
Because we understand that they were the vectors, the hosts, to bring those diseases over. But it was the Lord who allowed that stuff to happen. This is why we died and they recovered.
The pride of thine heart, saying, who can bring me down?
So it says, but for the natives in these parts, gold have so pursued them, as for 300 miles space, the greatest part of them are swept away by the smallpox, which still continues among them. So as God have thereby cleared our title to this place, so they say God cleared our claim to this place.
By wiping all of them out.
Those who remain in these parts, being in all not 50, have put themselves under our protection. This is why the natives broke bread with them. Because they were outnumbered. And they saw all this disease that wasted. They had nothing. The neighboring tribes, all of coastal New England, they were all being wiped out. So he puts here sarcastically, God, the original real estate agent.
Jeez.
Dang.
Right? So it says, many natives likewise infer that their God had abandoned them. Robert Cushman reported that those that are left have their courage much abated, and their countenance is dejected, and they seem as a people affrighted. Let me get Deuteronomy 28:25. Because it speaks about being smitten, being afflicted.
This is the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 28, verse 25. The Lord shall cause thee to be smitten before thine enemies. Thou shalt go out one way against them and flee seven ways before them.
So a lot of times we just think about it from the perspective of actual physical battle.
Right.
History teaches us that we actually, it wasn't their technology, it wasn't any of that. We actually were skilled fighters and warriors. We were skilled at warfare. It was the disease that decimated us to the point where they were able to gain an upper hand. We read this when I was going over American Holocaust and how, you know, people would come in and they would just kind of walk in over the body. So, it, you know, they took a city that almost everybody was already dead.
96% of the people were were killed off because of being in contact with the disease.
Right.
So, of course, they were outnumbered and taken.
Right.
It's
right.
insane.
Is that it on that verse?
No. Let me start from the top. The Lord shall cause thee to be smitten before thine enemies. Thou shalt go out one way against them and flee seven ways before them and shalt be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth.
Because captivity happened after that. They went under their protection, and this is why they were removed into all the kingdoms of the earth.
That's
because
right.
captivity came after that. We spoke last week how Squanto, they make it sound like he was some educated and he was an educated native as far as their standards.
Right.
What happened with Squanto was he was taken to Europe in captivity. He wasn't a foreign exchange student.
Right.
He escaped.
Right.
And in the years that it took him to make his way back, he picked up different things from the European culture and language and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that he went there in like some exchange program to be an ambassador, because that's how they try to teach you about it.
Yep.
Right. But he was taken there in captivity. What were you going to bring up?
I got verse 27. The Lord will smite thee with the botch of Egypt and with the emerods and with the scab and with the itch whereof thou canst not be healed.
This, and this is going into the different pox and the different plagues that was brought. So it says that the natives despaired so much that they lost confidence in their gods, and the priests destroyed the sacred objects of the tribe, which was what God wanted. That was the intention, because remember, they were worshiping false things. It says their religion provided no explanation as to why the native healers and their medicines and everything offered no relief and why this was happening to them. The Bible does, though.
Right,
right.
The Bible
right.
does, and we've given that explanation with just a few scriptures now. So it says their religion did it. It says many American Indians surrendered to alcohol, which we know this, right? You see,
you see a
present day native, and
8, 9, 10 in the morning.
90% of the time, they lick it up. They lick it up. All right. It says they converted to Christianity, and we still see that. Like it's amazing to me that I see Christian churches on the reservations, or they simply killed themselves.
Yep.
Which is.
And you see that.
You see even that today. They have, by percentage or like per capita or whatever, like they like to say, they have the highest suicide rates of any ethnicity in the country. Right.
Yep.
Native Americans. It says these epidemics probably constituted the most important geopolitical event of the early 17th century. They're saying that the disease, so I'm saying the Most High is a mastermind. This is why he was speaking about disease so much. I think a lot of times we think of the disease in isolation of the different things we suffer from individually.
Right.
But the role that disease played in us going into that, into what eventually became the most popular captivity, right? Maybe because it's more recent, right? Starting with Columbus coming over, and then obviously to this day, from there, because we were in captivity under Rome and in different ways, right? It says it was started and it was caused by this. It says their net result was that the English, for their first 50 years in New England, would face no real Indian challenge. Indeed, the plague helped prompt the legendary warm reception Plymouth enjoyed from the Wampanoags. So that's what I'm telling you, that it wasn't like, oh, the Indians came and they just helped us out of the kindness of their heart. They knew these guys were white devils. And it says, Massasoit, the Wampanoag leader, was eager to ally with the pilgrims because the plague had so weakened his villages that he feared the Narragansetts to the west. So because, you know, they had their own little tribal factions that they were
going
on.
Right.
It says God ended the controversy by sending the smallpox among the Indians. This was what one of the new settlers had wrote in one of his journals.
So basically, therefore shalt thou serve thine enemy, which the Lord shall send against thee.
Yes, yes. It says whole towns of them were swept away, and some of them not so much as one soul escaping the destruction. By the time the native populations of New England had replenished themselves to some degree, it was too late to expel the intruders, the illegal aliens.
Right, right? Exactly.
It says the technology and culture of Indians on America's East Coast were genuine rivals to those of the English. So this was to the statement that I said earlier. It wasn't that they were superior technological to us. It said the things we had rivaled those of the English. One can only speculate what the outcome of the rivalry would have been if the impact of European disease on the American population had not been so devastating. So essentially, they were emboldened because they saw that they had more numbers and they were better equipped. Because make no mistake about it, it did lead to slavery and destruction and raping and pillaging, but it started with the disease that laid waste to large numbers of us prior to that.
It started with the, oh my goodness.
So it says Henry Dobbins has a list of 93 epidemics among Native Americans between 1520 and 1918. He has recorded 41 eruptions of smallpox, 4 of bubonic plague, 17 of measles, and 10 of influenza, both often deadly among Native Americans, and 25 of tuberculosis, diphtheria, typhus, cholera, and other diseases, meaning these were severe outbreaks. Not that there were 43 cases of it, 43 times for smallpox, 4 bubonic plague, 17 epidemics of measles, 10 epidemics of influenza, and all the numbers that it took. It says when the Christians were exhausted from war, God saw fit to send the Indians smallpox.
Jeez.
This is what the Spaniards said when they were conquering Mexico City, and there was a great pestilence in the city. When the Spanish marched into Tenochtitlan, there were so many bodies that they had to walk on them. Most of the Spaniards were immune to the disease, and that fact itself helped to crush Aztec morale.
Jeez.
The pestilence continues today. Miners and loggers recently introduced European diseases to the Yanomamos of northern Brazil. You know how they said they discovered that there's still tribes?
Oh, yeah. They have them on YouTube and stuff.
It says miners and loggers. It's happening again, even now. So the curses are alive today.
Right.
It says miners and loggers recently introduced European diseases to the Yanomamos of northern Brazil and southern Venezuela, killing a fourth of their total population in 1991 alone. It says Charles Darwin, writing in 1839, put it almost poetically, wherever the Europeans had trod, death seems to pursue the aboriginal.
And that's straight up across the board. All they have to do is walk into a place and death is going to follow them.
And death follows them.
Man, how amazing is the Most High, really, that he can put these diseases in these people and they're able to live from it. And then they're able to just simply go to a land and then wipe them out, just with their presence.
Right, and just so right, because some might hear what we're going over, and say, "Well, you're just talking about disease as if it was, you know, that was what really killed everybody." No, because now I want to read these two excerpts that let you know what their intentions were.
Mm-hmm.
The disease paved the way, and it goes back to the mastermind of the Most High that He is. And this is how a mighty people were able to be smitten before such an inferior people compared to the Israelites. So it says historians could hardly tout Virginia as moral in intent, because the Virginia colony, remember, the Pilgrims came after, right? The Virginia colony was the big deal. The Pilgrims went to New England afterwards, and it says Virginia was their motivation supposedly was to colonize. It says historians could hardly tout Virginia as moral in intent. For in the words of the first history of Virginia, written by a Virginian, the chief design of all parties concerned was to fetch away the treasure from thence.
Fetch away the treasure.
Yes, because they're telling you what. And what does that tell you? They try to tell you that we came and we were savages, that we wanted to we sold swaths of land for beads on a string. No, we had treasure. They said when you read other accounts, it says we had gold and silver like woven into our fabrics.
Right.
We had diamonds. Like, it wasn't like plastic now. We do, like, you know, some people do some nice garments, right? You know, we do formal night and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's like plastic stones in there. You know what I'm saying? It's like, no, they had like real rubies and gems. It says aiming more at sudden gain than to form any regular colony. The Virginians' relations with American Indians were particularly unsavory. In contrast to Squanto, a volunteer, the English in Virginia took Indian prisoners and forced them to teach colonists how to farm.
It said in contrast to Squanto, a volunteer.
Right. But we did read Squanto. Remember, but and it's in this same thing. He talks about how Squanto was held captive. But remember, this is
He's just trying to create the account that when Squanto came back, he realized all his people were dead.
No,
so
right.
He had to
yeah.
throw in his
right.
lot with them.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yep. So he says, in 1623, the English indulged in the first use of chemical warfare in the colonies when negotiating a treaty with tribes near the Potomac River, headed by Chiskiak. The English offered a toast symbolizing eternal friendship, whereupon the chief, his family, advisors, and 200 followers dropped dead of poison. So, what are you thinking? Which one are you looking at?
Ecclesiastes 7:7.
Which what?
A gift destroyed the heart.
Oh, yeah, you can do that one. And where's the other one about his words were smoother than...
Oh, that's Psalm 55.
Yeah,
I was waiting on
that. We got to get that one on this one.
Waiting
really
on
quick.
That one. Mm-hmm. This is the book of Psalms, chapter 55, verse 20.
I know, right? I don't know what all that's about.
He hath put forth his hand against such as be at peace with him. He hath broken his covenant.
Right, so we just wrote that the English, they offered a toast symbolizing eternal friendship to the tribes, right? So this was near the Potomac River, and you had Chief Chiskiak, all
yep,
right,
yep,
right?
That's it. Yep, Chief Chiskiak.
Yeah.
The words of his mouth were smoother than butter.
Let's have a toast to symbolize our eternal
yep.
friendship. Come
yep.
on.
But war was in his heart.
And then they all died from poison. It said this was the first. I like the way he put it. Their first indulgence into chemical warfare. He said the English indulged in the first use of chemical warfare. Go ahead. Come on.
His words, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet were they drawn swords.
He said, whereupon the chief, his family, advisors, and 200 followers dropped dead of poison. Okay, read the one you were going to bring up.
All right. Let me grab that real quick.
Hey, that's why Esau, even to this day, they utilize chemical warfare when they go into these different countries because
yeah.
they knew that it
yes.
worked back then.
Yes, yes.
This is the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 7, verse 7. Surely oppression maketh the wise man mad,
mm-hmm.
and a gift destroyeth the heart.
Yeah, so they fell for it, and it didn't just destroy the heart; it like
destroyed
killed
their body.
Dead. Yep. So it says here, the invaders followed a pattern throughout the hemisphere. So this is talking about the Spaniards and the English colonists. Europeans pitched camp right in the middle of native populations: Cusco, Mexico City, Natchez, Chicago. Throughout New England, colonists appropriated American Indian cornfields for their initial settlements, avoiding the backbreaking labor of clearing the land of forest and rock. So instead of clearing the land, I'm telling you, you have this narrative that the pilgrims threw their bootstraps and did all
right.
this work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It says they just took the farmland and they said, oh, this is cleared land. So check this out. This explains why to this day the names of so many towns throughout the region Marsh Field, Springfield, Deerfield, and in Field. Because they didn't clear no wilderness. They didn't work hard to build their thing. They took the fields from the natives. They took them and said, oh, God left this field, this place cleared and open for me.
This is fancy.
Let's build some houses here. Instead of having to chop down trees and clear the land,
Jeez.
The new settlers encountered no wilderness. In this bay wherein we live, one colonist noted in 1622, in former time have lived about 2,000 Indians. So letting you know that they used to be here, but they're not anymore. The pilgrims began receiving Indian assistance on their second full day in Massachusetts. Right? It says, having their guns and hearing nobody, they entered into the houses and found the people were gone. Because why? The disease that had killed them from the first encounters that they had with them. So when they started to come in mass, right, they came with their guns, okay? So they came guns drawn,
mm-hmm.
all right? And they said they found nobody in the house. So these next few verses, I'm going to tell you what they are. They're grave robbers and scavengers. They're
vagabonds.
Not heroes. They're vagabonds.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
That's
the scripture
right.
says vagabonds. Dang. Because we're breaking down and deconstructing the myth that they came and did hard work and built themselves up, and the reasons they survived was because the natives helped them. To a degree, the natives did help them, but why? Because they had to throw their lot in with them because everybody was dead. And we read in Virginia how it wasn't even volunteer. They took them and said, you better show us.
Sit down and lay down.
To put it into like comparison to like today's time, right? You have Mark Jackson, who was a basketball player and a basketball coach, who coached the Golden State Warriors. He drafted all these players, he put all these people in position, and they got fired, right? The next year, they bring in Steve Kerr, who did nothing, but then they won three championships in 4 years, right? So he didn't have to build anything. He just he just inherited something just that was already perfect, and then got all the credit for it.
Yep. So it says they entered the houses and found the people were gone. What else does that tell you by what you read here? This is an excerpt from a journal. We didn't live in teepees only. We had houses.
Right.
We built things. We had houses. All right. It says the sailors took some things but didn't dare stay. We had meant to have left some beads and other things in the house as a sign of peace and to show we meant to trade with them. But we didn't do it because we left in such haste. But as soon as we can meet with the Indians, we will pay them for them well for what we took.
But they had their guns drawn.
Exactly. This is what we just read in Psalms 55, right? About their words. Right. Bro, they're thieves. They burglarized the house when nobody was home.
Straight up.
They burglarized the houses of the natives when nobody was home. Talking about we were going to leave some beads to show them that we want to trade with them.
So we were going to come in your house with our guns drawn.
Check it out.
Take what you had and then.
It wasn't only houses that pilgrims robbed. Eyewitnesses, resuming their story, say we marched to the place we called Cornhill, where we had found the corn before. At another place we had seen before, we dug and found some more corn, two or three baskets full, and a bag of beans. In all, we had about 10 bushels, which will be enough for seed. It was with God's help that we found this corn, for how else could we have done it without meeting some Indians who might trouble us? So they basically raided food stores.
Yep.
Of the natives. They didn't plant nothing. They were thieves. They came as thieves. Check it out. From the start, the pilgrims thanked God, not the American Indians, for assistance that the latter had inadvertently provided, setting a pattern for later Thanksgivings.
Mm.
One journalist continues, the next morning we found a place like a grave. We found a place like a grave. We decided to dig it up. We found first a mat and under that a fine bow. We also found bowls, trays, dishes, and things like that. We took several of the prettiest things to carry away with us and covered the body up again. They're grave robbers. They're thieves and grave robbers.
Wait, they were stealing things off of the bone.
They were digging up the graves because they knew that they were buried with stuff. And they took it. And they took it.
It's your homie.
It says the pilgrims continued to rob graves for years. And now it talks a little bit about Squanto. It says Squantos had learned their language. He explained from English fishermen who ventured into the New England waters each summer. Squanto taught the pilgrims how to plant corn, squash, and pumpkins. Would the small band of settlers have survived without Squanto's help? We cannot say. But by the fall of 1621, colonists and Indians could sit down to several days of feast and thanksgiving to God, later celebrated as the first Thanksgiving. What do most books leave out about Squanto? First, how he learned English. Around 1605, an English captain stole Squanto, who was then still a boy, along with four Pembascots, and took them to England. There, Squanto spent 9 years, three in the employ of Gorgas. It's slavery. They're saying employ. They're using nice words.
Right.
All right. All sources agree, however, that in 1614, an English slave raider seized Squanto and two dozen fellow Indians and sold them into slavery in Malaga, Spain. What happened next makes Ulysses look like a homebody. So he's basically, because they talk about Ulysses
as Grant,
right? Mm-hmm. And his adventures in traveling the wilderness of Americas. It says, so check out Squanto's path. Squanto escaped from Spain, and made his way back to England after trying to get home via Newfoundland. In 1619, he talked to Thomas de Mere into taking him along on his next trip to Cape Cod. So it basically says he found his way back, and when he got home, he said he saw the horrifying discovery that he was the sole member of his village still left alive.
Mm.
All the others had perished in the epidemic 2 years before. No wonder Squanto threw in his lot with the pilgrims. It says the pallet account in land of promise, right? So this is the what history will teach you, not this real story about his captivity. And that's why I say, like, it would probably make a real good movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It, like, if Mel Gibson would do it, like, in an apocalypto type of theme of how Squanto was taken, how he escaped different slave masters in Europe and was traveling through Europe trying to make his way back home. And then it's like a sad story because, right, just like Apocalypto ended with the ships coming of the Spaniards,
right?
He looked victorious, but now the destruction came. Squanto makes it home, but then sees his whole family, his
decimated.
Whole people decimated, destroyed. I said, that'd be a hell of a good movie right there. It says, this is the account in Land of Promise. It says he had learned their language from English fishermen, not in slavery in England.
Stop it, fam.
As translator, ambassador, and technical advisor, Squanto was essential to the survival of Plymouth in its first 2 years. Squanto was not the pilgrim's only aide. In the summer of 1621, Massouet sent another Indian, Hobomok, to live among the pilgrims for several years as guide and ambassador. Let me see what else I want to touch here. I read this part. We read the part about the civil religion. Oh, there's another funny one. So there's another little excerpt. I'm just jumping through some stuff. It says that the thing is silly, like the whole way that and the foods that we eat for Thanksgiving that are traditional foods. He says the silliness of all this reaches its zenith in the handouts that school children have carried home for decades, complete with captions such as they serve pumpkins and turkeys and corn and squash. The Indians had never seen such a feast.
Oh, my goodness.
When Native American novelist Michael Doris' son brought home this information from his New Hampshire elementary school, Doris pointed out that the pilgrims had literally never seen such a feast since all the foods mentioned are exclusively indigenous to the Americas and have been provided by or with the aid of the local tribe. So in the school literature, it says the Indians had never seen such a feast. And he said, no, the pilgrims never saw it because those foods they did not have over there, right? It says... the notion that we, advanced peoples, provided for the natives is exactly the converse of the truth. It's not benign. It reemerges time and again in our history to complicate race relations, that they were superior and we were inferior. Mm-hmm. Today, Americans believe as part of our political understanding of the world that we are the most generous nation on earth in terms of foreign aid, overlooking the fact that the net dollar flow from over every third world nation runs toward the United States. The true history of Thanksgiving reveals embarrassing facts. The pilgrims did not introduce the tradition. Eastern Indians had observed autumnal harvest celebrations for centuries. So they're talking about the Persians. It says modern celebrations date back to only 1863, during the Civil War, when the Union needed all the patriotism that such an observance might muster. Abraham Lincoln proclaimed Thanksgiving a national holiday. The ideological meaning American history has ascribed to Thanksgiving compounds the embarrassment. The Thanksgiving legend makes Americans ethnocentric. In Race and Manifest Destiny, Reginald Horseman has shown the idea of God on our side was used to legitimize the open expression of Anglo-Saxon superiority vis-a-vis Mexicans, Native Americans, peoples of the Pacific. It says in 1970, for example, the Massachusetts Department of Commerce asked the Wampanoags, this is 1970, to select a speaker to mark the 350th anniversary of the Pilgrim's Landing. Frank James was selected, but first he had to show a copy of his speech to the white people in charge of the ceremony. When they saw what he had written, they would not allow him to read it. This is what James had written. Today is a time of celebrating for you, but it is not a time of celebrating for me. It is with heavy heart that I look back upon what happened to my people. The pilgrims had hardly explored the shores of Cape Cod 4 days before they had robbed the graves of my ancestors and stolen their corn, wheat, and beans. Massasoit, the great leader of the Wampanoag, knew these facts, yet he and his people welcomed and befriended the settlers, little knowing that before 50 years were to pass, the Wampanoags and other Indians living near the settlers would be killed by their guns or dead from diseases that we caught from them. Although our way of life is almost gone and our language is almost extinct, we the Wampanoag still walk the lands of Massachusetts. What has happened cannot be changed, but today we work toward a better America, a more Indian America, where people and nature once again are important.
No, you ain't reading that.
Since most of our textbooks also omit the facts about grave robbing, Indian enslavement. There is an Indian slave trade.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I got books about that that I've yet
right.
to bring out, and so on, even though they were common knowledge in colonial New England. Thus, our popular history of the Pilgrims has not been a process of gaining perspective, but of deliberate forgetting.
Boom.
I'll leave it at that for that.
Kev, I got to bring this out.
Bring it out.
Because every time we – I mean, this book is called Lies My Teacher Told Me.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, who was your teacher? Who was our teachers growing up, right?
Right.
So let me get this script. It's 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there be a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God.